Hello, listeners. Welcome to season 7 of our Big Unlock podcast. My name is Ritu M. Oberoi, and I'm a managing partner here at Big Rio and Demo Consulting. And I'll be your host today for the Big Unlock podcast. And hopefully Rohit will join us soon. Today, we are welcoming Michael Archuleta to our podcast. Michael is the Chief Information Officer at Mount San Rafael Hospital, where he has helped transform a rural critical access hospital into a nationally recognized leader in digital innovation, cybersecurity, and healthcare IT. Michael is a perennial Becker's Hospital CIO to know, nationally recognized speaker and advisor to health technology companies. His work has spanned cloud transformation, cybersecurity, AI adoption, and more recently, one of the most significant technology initiatives in the hospital's history, which is the transition to Oracle Health. So we are really excited to have Michael here with us today, and hopefully we'll have a great conversation and get to ask him some wonderful questions. So thank you for joining us on the podcast today, Michael.
Well, thank you very much. It's definitely a pleasure to be here.
Michael, would you like to tell us a little bit more about San Rafael Hospital? Because our listeners might not know, and then we can get started with the questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So Mount San Rafael Hospital is located in Trinidad, Colorado. So our county, Los Angeles County, is actually the largest county in the state of Colorado, which is a huge initiative. So we have about almost 9,000 in population. The county as a whole has maybe a total of around 14,000 specific patients moving forward. You know, I've really had a passion about rural healthcare. I've always stated that in the end, your zip code should never determine your healthcare outcomes. And that is such a critical element moving forward. And that's what we really believe here at Mount San Rafael, that, you know, we should provide the most enhanced patient care initiatives. If a patient comes here, if a patient goes to Denver Health, if a patient goes to UC Health, they get that same amount of care. And we really focus a lot on the innovation, the technology enhancements, because again, your zip code should never determine your healthcare outcomes. And unfortunately, though, in rural America, it does. But we've been so fortunate enough to bring a lot of innovation and advancements of what we're doing as a nationally recognized rural healthcare hospital within the state of Colorado.
Great. So you've described your Oracle Health implementation as much more than an EHR replacement. And you recently shared that the principle is that follow the patient journey, not the org chart. And that's a really powerful leadership philosophy. So tell us a little bit more about this project and what advice would you give other CIOs who are embarking on, you know, these kind of modernization efforts?
You know, 100%. You know, it's definitely the overall patient initiative, the patient journey. I've always said this is that in the end, if you work in healthcare, you have a new CEO, and your new CEO is the patient. And that's basically the bottom line. You know, as a technology leader too, and as a business leader of this organization, you know, the goal is we have to always build asynchronous tools that benefit our patients, both inside and outside the organization, which is extremely critical because patient care is definitely number one. You know, we have to look at specific initiatives that allow us to enhance our patient care outcomes, you know, that allow us to enhance the way we share information, the way we get an overall picture of the complete view of the actual patient's health, which is very beneficial for our clinicians. And also, giving the appropriate tool sets to our clinicians to really help on better outcomes, utilizing artificial intelligence as an actual tool set to really create some better outcomes. You know, I've always stated this is that AI is, you know, I know a lot of individuals are very concerned about AI. And of course, AI does have specific pros and cons to it, but if you utilize AI to an enhancement point, to really looking at how we can basically create better outcomes, better ways of automation, better ways to operate as an organization, better ways to enhance and designate proper clinical documentation or clinical outcomes for our patients, these are initiatives that can be life-saving. I mean, we put in specific AI algorithms into our radiology practice, and I could literally say that those have been life-saving algorithms to really create better outcomes for the radiology team as well. So again, we're using this technology to really excel and just really basically enhance the overall focus of what we have, because that's such an important thing. Because again, when an organization is looking at replacing a specific system or investing in some additional item, you have to ask yourselves, what's the why? Is it because, you know, we're looking at better operations? Is it because we're looking at the enhancements of better patient care? All of our focus, I can state, is that anything that we've done moving forward with the investments of the digital initiatives that we've put into place now have all had a patient-centric strategy attached to them, because that's how critical it is. That's how we want to continue to basically evolve, because you figure this overall industry of healthcare is continuing to evolve. You know, I've always stated that hospitals and clinics are digital companies that deliver healthcare services. We're truly living in the digital age of healthcare. We have to get away from that brick and mortar theology of what healthcare has really been built on. So getting on top of this and moving forward with a strategic partnership with Oracle Health basically allows us to really kind of move into the next era of healthcare on how we're looking at utilizing technology to really improve on those outcomes moving forward. If you look at the overall Oracle Health platform too, you know, we have always stated that we're looking at specific applications and systems that are really AI native, that you have that AI native built into the overall process itself, which really enhances better outcomes moving forward from your EHR to your patient portal. Using this, again, this technology for the better good is really our mission moving forward.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Thank you for that great answer. You know, we had Dr. Bharat Sutaria on the podcast from Oracle Health, and he had also talked about this being AI native and how that's going to be a real game changer, you know, because it has all the things kind of built in rather than increasing the number of clicks. You're actually reducing the number of clicks with AI and voice. So I think you've leapfrogged a lot of health systems out there by moving ahead with this implementation.
100%. And again, this overall move to Oracle Health was really a strategic investment, again, in the future of this organization moving forward, which is such a critical thing of anything that we do. And I know, as I stated again, too, is by integrating true clinical AI with like modern unified EHR system, we're giving our caregivers technology that really removes barriers. And that's what you were stating, you know, how do we remove those barriers, those consistent clicks? How do we basically have the provider, let providers be providers, allow that provider to become a provider again, versus being attached to an actual workstation, which again is an issue, you know? So incorporating technology like ambient AI basically allows us to remove those barriers, enhance better ways of clinical documentation initiatives, reduce any type of consistent burnouts for these providers. Because you figure, too, they're consistently seeing patients. And basically, at times, they do get behind with documentation. And unfortunately, they're doing this after hours or taking this home. So that work-life balance for our clinicians at times could be very difficult. And again, we have to show that we're putting in this technology to also create better automation, better efficiencies, you know, reduce any type of administrative strain, you know, strengthen the connections between, again, our physicians and our patients. And this really positions our facility to deliver high-performing, more connected, and more sustainable model of care for the overall region. And that is such a critical element of anything that we're planning on doing into the future.
Yeah. So Michael, seeing that Oracle is also AI native, we are seeing a lot of concerns around AI with, you know, trust and governance. So you talk a lot about cybersecurity, and you've mentioned that cybersecurity is fundamentally a patient safety issue rather than simply just an, you know, IT responsibility. So now as you're seeing that AI is becoming embedded across all these clinical workflows, then what do you think CIOs, how do they need to approach this, and how do they need to rethink cyber resilience as an essential component of, you know, clinical quality rather than just operational risk?
You know, I love that statement right there too. Right? So security, cybersecurity has to be and I consistently repeat this, is it has to be a core component to the overall organizational strategy, period. Mm-hmm. I mean, cybersecurity is an extremely critical initiative that needs to be incorporated into any organization. You know, it was a little interesting, but I was looking at some data points, and they did this national survey that they sent it out to many health systems. And they were stating that only about, I think there was like 43% of healthcare organizations provide basic cybersecurity awareness training to their end users. So we have this major gap where organizations aren't really focusing on the importance of security. And that's an issue too. I mean, healthcare went from the top 10 to the top one most attacked industries out there. That is a major concern moving forward. When I go to my board of directors, I focus on three specific elements. I focus on FOR, which is financial, operational, reputational. So I tell my board of directors, so if a cybersecurity breach basically happens within the organization, what happens on a financial standpoint? What happens on an operational standpoint? And what happens on a reputational standpoint when this basically happens moving forward? So again, looking at those specific three elements and trying to put that into an overall storyline of the importance of why we continue to invest in security initiatives, it's so critical. I mean, deepfake technology, especially with the utilization of AI, is becoming more advanced than ever. You know, they're utilizing voice clips, they're using video clips to make it look very legitimate. And I mean, again, you know, we're very used to Zoom, WebEx, different specific platforms to basically connect. And who knows if you're actually speaking with either the real person or if it's a deepfake AI specific video that's been designed by an actual threat actor trying to, you know, compromise your overall organization. Another critical element too that's very important too is social engineering. You know, I think that's really extremely critical. So what we did, which was a little bit out of the norm when we do a security risk analysis, we basically did a security risk analysis, which we focus on, you know, doing penetration testing. We focus on policies and procedures. But I wanted to do something unique. I wanted to see how resilient is our organization and how vigilant and attentive are our employees as well. So we did a social engineering tactic where an actual individual had almost a similar badge to what you would be issued if you got employment here at the facility itself, but there was a lot of different distinctions. We wanted to determine if that individual could basically come in directly into the facility and how much access would that person be able to basically get from different departments within the organization and if they would have asked questions. So again, this really opened up the overall eyes of saying, hey, you know, attentiveness and vigilance is extremely important. Having the basic understanding that sometimes cybersecurity can be physical, can be on that social engineering standpoint. So having the visualization in place was so critical, and just showing those results and then capturing it and presenting it as a whole, you know, showing the clips from the individual trying to gain access into the garage area, trying to gain access into different specific units, you know, showing her badge to individuals where she was bypassing through specific areas. So again, these are learning opportunities, because one thing that I always state though is we can have the best procedures, the best policies in place. But if we're not actively testing these specific initiatives to really determine if it is a true successful outcome on any security initiative that we do, we're not going to be successful moving forward. So consistent testing and validating your overall cybersecurity specific program is such a critical element. Continuing to invest in cybersecurity awareness initiatives is really critical as well. You know, we've really focused a lot on deepfake initiatives, you know, trying to teach our end users the basics and the awareness and what to validate and what to look at for when it comes to phishing emails. And they're getting more advanced. They're getting harder to detect as well, because again, these threat actors are utilizing AI to create these initiatives to try to basically breach an organization. And that's why I've always stated, though, too, is that we have to fight AI with AI as well. So investing and incorporating that into your overall security operation centers, you know, looking to kind of determine, does your endpoint detection and response application have some AI roadmaps that could really enhance that overall focus? You know, we focus a lot on EDR, SIEM, SOC, identity management, two-factor authentication, micro-segmentation, all these specific elements that are extremely critical to continue to basically build that strong cybersecurity program that we have within the organization. And I've always stated this too, is that if we do not invest in our human firewall, that is, we will not have a successful outcome moving forward. Because you figure that, unfortunately, the weakest process and the riskiest process is your end users. Your end users are really the ones that are either allowing these threat actors in or keeping them out as well. So investing in some of the basics and the understandings of the importance of security is such a critical element. So building that human firewall is such an important aspect moving forward. And since everything as well is moving to the cloud, we have a hybrid model. You know, identity management is such a critical element on anything that we're doing. So we're continuously investing in those specific initiatives, which is extremely important to our overall security program.
Thank you, Michael. That was a really comprehensive answer. And I'm sure, you know, everyone who's listening to the podcast has a lot to learn from you there. So thank you. Rohit, would you like to ask a question?
Yeah, thank you, Ritu. Michael, I was just thinking about what you said and how it would relate to the usage of, let's say, Gen AI tools like ChatGPT by the employees in the organization. We've learned that everyone's kind of embracing these generative AI tools in some form or other, at least in their personal lives. And then they're coming to the business environment and they're also wanting to use these tools. And there might be a potential that they could expose proprietary information into the generative AI tools inadvertently or unknowingly. So wanted to get your thoughts, process of how generative AI is being embraced organization-wide, and also like any AI governance initiatives that you might have in place.
You know, absolutely. So generative AI specific sites like Claude, ChatGPT, at this time, they're currently blocked within our complete environment itself. I mean, there's been some breach issues with ChatGPT that you've heard on in the news, you know, where individuals, as you were stating, are basically putting in proprietary information. Unfortunately, if an end user isn't fully aware of how to configure the actual session in OpenAI, you know, then this basically allows the overall algorithm just to basically absorb that information. And theoretically, that information can be leaked, which creates a massive breach for an organization moving forward. So again, we've really just blocked all those specific initiatives right now. We are basically looking and we are investing more on Copilot with Microsoft. We do have designated approved specific applications that we do have within the organization. Copilot is really just basically being developed so we can kind of around the organization and enhancing it into our Office 365 environment, enhancing it into what we do as an organization to really customize it moving forward. But if we just let free range happen with some of these Gen AI specific tool sets, that could create a major security issue and a security breach. So it is consistently blocked within the entire organization moving forward, and we'll continue to monitor as things progress on that as well.
That's great to know. So the people have access to Microsoft Copilot, which they can use on a regular basis.
That is correct. That is an approved application that's designated, has all the security processes in place that we've developed within our overall program. But other specific Gen AI tools are just completely blacklisted.
How are you seeing the adoption of Microsoft Copilot, Michael? Are a lot of people in various departments using it for, you know, there's so many AI use cases that you can think of?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of great enhancements in regards to Copilot, especially with the incorporation of, you know, helping on a validation standpoint for finances, you know, incorporating it directly into spreadsheets, you know, developing it into specific reports to break it down into more of a readable and understandable format. You know, I think these departments are basically utilizing this technology to kind of customize their overall department on how it fits, on how it works, on how to enhance, on how to accelerate, providing some specific ideas and some points that could be beneficial, utilizing it as well too to enhance on some policies and procedures and validate the information. So again, there is great use cases that we currently have in place with the utilization of that technology, which have been really a good efficient tool set for this organization moving forward.
That's great to know. And one more question I would like to ask, just curious, Michael, about generally speaking, what are some of the innovation initiatives or processes that you follow? And how do you foster it, like, within the organization?
Absolutely. So one of the biggest initiatives that we're focusing on right now is the RHTP program.
Yeah.
You know, a big, beautiful bill, which is the Rural Hospital Transformational Program. Huge initiative. I mean, it's about $50 billion for 5 years. Each state applies for that overall initiative. The state of Colorado received almost around, I believe, $190 million, but I think they're only allocating about $160 million. The facilities, the critical access organizations are basically going to apply for this. So you figure this application process is really looking at on how rural health is going to transform the way they deliver healthcare services moving forward, which I think is a huge initiative, especially this is where you're going to see a lot more innovation coming out of rural America as well. Because again, healthcare has definitely been behind the curve when it comes to digital transformation. And you go down even into rural America, it's even a slower pace. But now with some of these actual initiatives and these funds, this is going to allow some of these organizations to really move in a good direction of what they need to do if they basically strategically align their overall projects correctly with the application process. What we're seeing as a big driver for us as well is we're starting to look at how do we focus more on RPM initiatives, remote patient monitoring initiatives, the in-home hospital initiatives. Sure. We have a lot of remote patients that have even hard times to coming into the overall hospital itself. You know, you have specific patients living in rural America that at the last minute, they're going to go see a provider once everything gets worse versus, you know, consistently monitoring your overall progress moving forward. As I mentioned too, in my first statement, your zip code should never determine your healthcare outcomes. That's a factual thing. But the thing is, though, is it's a sad situation because in rural America, people basically live less than people living in metro America because it's very hard to gain the same level of services from these bigger systems moving forward. So our overall model has really been, how do we basically focus? How do we strategize? How do we innovate? How do we bring technology that actually matters to the organization as a whole? And we've been very, very successful on that. You know, investing in remote patient monitoring, investing in artificial intelligence. You know, we've really have been a forefront. We've been a beta site. We've been, you know, an innovator. We're a CMS five-star hospital, which I think there was only two rural facilities in the state of Colorado that basically received that initiative. Mount San Rafael was one. Bell Health was basically number two. And you figure we're doing more with less. So how do we basically innovate? How do we automate? We work in healthcare. So again, as I stated, we're doing more with less. And how do we basically bring those initiatives in place to really enhance better patient care outcomes? Because patient care is definitely number one. Bringing in different tool sets, looking at better ways to recruit our overall providers, better ways to reduce any type of burnouts with the use of AI. Again, AI is really changing the overall landscape of healthcare. It's very impressive that healthcare has really embraced it and is starting to utilize this technology to the highest level compared to any other industry out there right now, too. I mean, it's very impressive on the directions that this industry is moving in. And again, we're really moving is forward, not backwards. We see where we need to invest. We came to the point that, you know, there is, unfortunately, when you come into healthcare, there's a lot of antiquated systems. There's a lot of legacy systems in place. How do we unify those systems? How do we unify it into one database? How do we enhance on interoperability? How do we enhance on seamless exchange initiatives? We're incorporating AI for the overall provider. So once the documentation is completely completed, it's basically going to, it's an algorithm that basically helps the overall provider select an appropriate CPT code based off of that documentation. Because you figure too, prior to AI and all these new initiatives that we're putting into place, these poor providers have been having to be like billers, coders, you know, getting away from being an actual doctor and trying to put in these additional roles. So again, looking at seeing how we reduce the barriers of what we've seen in this industry is so important, because if we could reduce those barriers, if we could automate, if we could basically enhance better patient care outcomes, if we could honestly get to the point that your zip code should never determine your healthcare outcomes, you come to our facility, you'll get the same level of care, same level of technology as you would in a larger health system itself. So again, that is a philosophy, that is a motto. That's the direction we are basically moving forward in. The acceleration of digital transformation is definitely here.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, totally agree with everything you said. So I think we can wrap this up and just ask you a last question, Michael. So like you've described, so healthcare is entering this era where now CIOs are expected to oversee not just the traditional things that you used to, but also AI, cybersecurity, cloud strategy, digital experience. So how do you think the role of the healthcare CIO is evolving now and maybe over the next couple of years? And which leadership thing, you know, capabilities do you think will become more important than just the technical expertise? Because even for security, you mentioned it's the human firewall, you know. So at the end of it, it's behavioral change and you need to take everybody with you. So
100%. In the end, yes, I am a technology executive, a technology leader, but we have to be business leaders as the number one basic point. We have to understand the organization as a whole, not just on a technology standpoint, but as a complete organizational operational initiative. That is so important. Again, you know, we're really looking at enhancing operational outcomes for an organization. The CIO is really focused on looking at creating more automation that really enhances revenue cycle initiatives, which is extremely critical. Trying to get away from that stereotype of what IT has always been built on. And that stereotype is this, is that IT has always been considered a cost center, right? Versus a strategic revenue contributor to the organization itself. That's a direction that we're basically going in. That's a direction as an actual business leader, as the overall roles basically evolve, focusing on how do we enhance better patient care outcomes? How do we basically recruit? How do we help? How do we automate? How do we reduce burnouts? I mean, there's a lot of focus on an operational standpoint, on a business continuity standpoint, technical standpoint, on a patient care initiative. Those are the specific evolutions of everything that we're moving forward. I remember Chime did this awesome presentation that was talking about the evolution of a CIO and from where the CIO started from, you know, the beginning to now, you know, focusing on innovation, on operational initiatives, focusing on the overall political landscape of where this industry is going, understanding those outcomes, being a strategist for the organization to really look at seeing how do we strategize with what's needed for this organization moving forward. So the evolution is definitely coming, and there's a lot more responsibilities and items because you figure everything that we do now has a technology piece associated with it. But I think, though, is the CIOs that are really going to make a difference is how are they using the technology for better outcomes moving forward within the organizations? Technology that truly matters, technology that has a patient-centric initiative associated with that. Those are the game changers, and those are the basically the innovators that are moving forward as the CIO basically evolves.
Great. Thank you for that answer, Michael. And I think, you know, that brings us to the end of the podcast. So thank you so much for being our guest here today.
Thank you very much. You two do an amazing job.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.